Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Trump Sunday says he's not happy in the wake of the latest attempted missile launch by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Well, I didn't say don't test the missile. He's going to have to do what he has to do. But he understands we're not going to be very happy. And I will tell you, a man that I've gotten to like and respect, the president of China, President Xi, I believe has been putting pressure on him also. But so far, perhaps nothing's happened, and perhaps it has. This was a small missile. This was not a big missile. This was not a nuclear test, which he was expected to do 3 days ago. We'll see what happens.
Mr. Trump on the U.S. program Face the Nation said despite the missile failure, Pyongyang will eventually develop a better delivery system, and that must not be allowed to happen. White House National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster told Fox News Sunday North Korea poses a grave threat to the Asia-Pacific region.
And so we have to do something, again, with partners in the region and globally. And that involves enforcement of the U.N. sanctions that are in place. It may mean ratcheting up those sanctions even further. And it also means being prepared for military operations if necessary.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has warned the United Nations Security Council of what he called catastrophic consequences if the international community does not pressure Pyongyang to end its nuclear and missile programs. French forces in Mali say they killed or captured more than 20 jihadists in Mali near the border with Burkina Faso. A French military spokesman said the militants had been targeted in a forested area in southwest Gao province. Border between Mali and Burkina Faso has been increasingly unstable due to extremists launching attacks. This is VOA News. President Trump spoke Sunday with leaders of Singapore and Thailand about the North Korean threat. He spoke Saturday with Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte and invited him to the White House. White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus on ABC's This Week was asked about concerns over alleged rights abuses committed by Mr. Duterte's government in the war on drugs.
I'm not so sure it's a matter of honoring this president or any of the facts that you've laid out there. It's really a matter of a potential for nuclear and massive destruction in Asia and the potential, at least according to North Korea, of developing an ICBM that could, at some point down the line, if we do nothing, potentially reach the United States. This is a different level of a problem that we need cooperation among our partners in Southeast Asia.
East-West Institute Senior Fellow Gerard Finnan tells VOA a White House visit by the Philippines leader reflects a lessening of tensions between Washington and Manila since Mr. Duterte took office. Finnan said such a visit would be beneficial.
It's important always to keep high-level channels of communication open with our alliance or treaty partners, of which the Philippines is one.
Finnan said U.S. criticism of the Philippines' lack of respect for the rule of law and international human rights has been unsuccessful, and a face-to-face meeting with U.S. officials might prove more effective. An American businesswoman has returned to the United States after spending 2 years in detention in China over charges of espionage. Sandy Van Gillis was deported after being sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. She was arrested in March of 2015 while attempting to leave the mainland for Macau. Deportation comes at a time of warming bilateral ties between Washington and Beijing. With a week to go before French voters return to the polls to choose among two remaining presidential candidates, National Front leader Marine Le Pen told France News 2 on Sunday that the country is at a crossroads.
À la France, son unité. Je crois qu'on est vraiment arrivé à un moment donné.
Le Pen said what is at stake is civilization, and she asked, will France continue to be France? Le Pen is trying to close a nearly 20-point gap in public opinion polls. Her rival, Emmanuel Macron, on Sunday paid homage to tens of thousands of French Jews who were killed in the Holocaust during World War II. Today, both candidates will hold May Day rallies, and there are expected to be demonstrations against both candidates.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Monday, May 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations Refugee Agency on Sunday airlifted its first batch of relief supplies to the more than 11,000 people on Angola's northern border fleeing the latest violence in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. And the government of Uganda is conducting a series of meetings between the local communities that host hundreds of refugees from South Sudan.
We encourage these meetings not only within the implementing agencies and the local communities, but even between the locals and the refugees, so they come to appreciate each other.
That is Uganda's State Minister of Internal Affairs, Obiega Mario. And in Gambia, President Adama Barrow marked 100 days in office.
Life is really, I think the mere fact that you can actually wake up, go to work, come back home, and not be arrested.
Saliu Tal is a co-founder of Gambia Has Decided, a political movement in Banjul. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tunisian police killed an Islamist militant and another died when he detonated his suicide explosive belt during an exchange of gunfire after a raid in the central city of Sidi Bouzid, a government official said on Sunday. Tunisia's armed forces have been engaged in cracking down militants allied to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda's North Africa branch since the country suffered four major attacks in the last 2 years. The United Nations Refugee Agency airlifted its first batch of relief supplies to the more than 11,000 people on Angola's northern border. The people are fleeing the latest violence in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. UN say that more than a million civilians have been displaced inside the DRC since a brutal conflict broke out in the Kasai region in May 2016, with about 25,000 asylum seekers crossing into Angola. The UN Refugee Agency's Southern Africa representative, Sharon Cooper, said in a statement that arrivals are in urgent need of life-saving assistance, including food, water, shelter, and medical services. A cargo aircraft carrying mosquito nets, blankets, and sanitary items flew in from Dubai and landed near Dundu, about 100 kilometers from the Angola-DRC border, where the UNHCR has set up a makeshift center. The UN said that it would send more relief items to Angola in the coming days. The Kamuina Nsapu insurrection that erupted in the DRC's Kasai Central province last August has become the most serious threat to President Joseph Kabila's 16-year rule, with lawlessness across Africa's second-largest country inflamed by Kabila's decision to remain in power after his mandate ran out in December. A UN team of investigators said this month that it had uncovered 40 mass grave sites and killings of more than 400 people in Kasai. U.S. President Donald Trump is not the only head of state marking his 100 days in office. In Gambia, President Adama Barrow, who took office after the intervention of ECOWAS, commemorated 100 days in office. From the streets of the capital Banjul, reporter Seine Marena spoke to people on what they see as failures and accomplishments of Barrow's new administration.
As Gambia's new president Adama Barrow celebrated his first 100 days in power Friday, reaction on the street of the capital Banjul regarding the accomplishment of his administration are mixed. Critics say the new president lacked clear vision on how to tackle country's challenges following a 22-year-old dictatorship under Yahya Jammeh. But his supporters say President Barrow has inherited a broken economy with a debt at about 115% of the GDP and youth employment at 38%. Saliu Tal is the co-founder of Gambia Has Decided, which was a force to be reckoned with during the political impasse.
I think it's actually very difficult to assess the first 100 days of President Barrow, because I think 100 days is too short a time to make a very fair assessment of a government, in my humble opinion. Notwithstanding, I would really like to see a roadmap of where the new administration intends to take us and how, and we all would like to participate in that process. Sooner we have a roadmap, it will leave little room for speculation. When there's no roadmap, everybody will come with their own speculation as to how it is going. Life is really, I think the mere fact that you can actually wake up, go to work, come back home, and not be arrested and not disappear. I think that is, to me, that is worth a lot. We are in a much better position than they can ever imagine. If you look at what happened in the last 20 years, but I don't want I would not want us to compare where we're heading with what we had, because what we had was horrible. It's not even a good benchmark. I think the bar is now higher.
The Barrow administration has pledged to set up Truth and Reconciliation Commission to investigate the widespread abuses reported during 22 years dictatorship of former President Yahya Jammeh. Many say the greatest weakness of Barrow is the lack of strategy and effective communication.
Though we were not expecting it to be rapid, as everybody's thinking that it's Barrow will just be in office and change Gambia and turn Gambia into Dubai or any other luxury state. But so far, I haven't seen anything positive, especially concerning the cabinet. I haven't seen them on TV or any cabinet meeting. So I am not happy, honestly, when it comes to the new government here. I think their priority should be, first of all, our main problem is electricity, as we're speaking.
Since we're approaching 100 days of Barrow in office, but I have not seen the strategic document of President Barrow and his government. Now, that tells you that our country, President Barrow and his government are moving, but there is no sense of direction whatsoever. Now, also the issue of the office of the vice president. Now, you want to tell me, for all the people that we have in this country, there is no competent individual to maneuver that position? Or why should it still be an individual overseeing that position? So there is that sense.
All cannot be achieved in just a small space of time. I think we need to give him some allowance as we progress. We hope that all those development agenda that he set aside for the country's rapid growth and development.
Change is clearly noticeable in the streets of the capital, Banjul, where residents openly share their views regarding the government on various policies. And while this may not be the direct result of government policy and rather part of benefit of a dictator stepping down. For VOA News, I am Seni Marena in Banjul.
Malawian President Peter Mutharika recently accused his predecessor of masterminding a massive looting of public funds during her term in office. However, supporters of the former President Joyce Banda say that this is yet another attempt by the president to tarnish the reputation of his predecessor. VOA's reporter Peter Claudi spoke to Malawi presidential spokesperson Ngeme Kalirani.
His Excellency, the President, Professor Asa Peter Mutharika, was just stating a matter of fact that is before the courts. As if you have been following what has been going on in the trials pertaining to the cash gate, which is the systematic looting of public coffers, which happened between 2012 and 2013 under President Dr. Joyce Banda's time, several suspects have been convicted. They are now convicts and they are serving various jail terms. And from what has transpired in those trials, several of them have stated on record under oath that they were doing that with the full knowledge of the former president.
If this is what is recorded in the court and the president is aware of this, why hasn't the president gone after the former president in terms of extradition to face justice in Malawi instead of just saying it for the sake of doing so?
Yeah, that's a very important question, but you have to appreciate our judicial system in Malawi. The way our judicial system operates in Malawi is such that it is entirely independent of the executive, which is headed by the president. In Malawi, we have several prosecuting authorities. These matters under Cashgate are being prosecuted, most of them under the Anti-Corruption Bureau. And in our setup in Malawi, the Anti-Corruption Bureau operates completely independent of instructions from the president. It is up to them to look at the evidence before them and to decide on the timing of the prosecution, which they would do, prefer to do and at what time. It is not up to the president to make such a decision.
Supporters of the former president, Dr. Joyce Banda, are saying that this is purely a witch hunt. Since President Mutharika came into power, he basically has targeted her and accused her of a slew of wrongdoings, including this cash gate, and possibly have colluded with these people who have been convicted of involving themselves in this scandal just to tarnish her reputation as the former president, as an opponent of President Mutharika. What do you say to that?
That is completely outrageous. Well, these are matter of facts. The Cashgate looting of public coffers, as a matter of fact, happened between 2012 and 2013. And it is a matter of fact that during this period, former President Joyce Banda was the president. Further, there are several former ministers from Dr. Joyce Banda's administration that have been implicated in this scandal. Some are serving jail terms right now. And some of them have said it is their former president, Joyce Banda, who happens also to be the president of their party, who had instructed them to do this. President Dr. Joyce Banda left the country 3 years ago. Immediately she lost power. Immediately this Cashgate scandal came to light. She left the country. She hasn't been in Malawi for the past 3 years. And speculations are bound to happen. Why is she not coming back?
President Mutharika said that there is a perception that corruption is worsening currently. How is this fight against corruption, since Malawians themselves are saying, and he admits, that this is the perception that corruption has worsened during his presidency?
The president also said that this particular perception is being promoted by most of the people that are answering charges now. You know, the nature of corruption is such that once, as a leadership, you decide to pounce on individuals that have been benefiting from corruption, they have a tendency to fight back, because you're fighting individuals that have access to rooted funds. You are fighting individuals that had networks in the government systems. So they don't go down so easily.
VOA's reporter Peter Clotis spoke to presidential spokesman Geme Kalirani. Still in Malawi, the country is struggling to eradicate the devastating banana bunchy top disease, which has attacked over 90% of banana fields across the country. Banana farming in Malawi has experienced a huge drop, largely because of the disease, which has left farmers in banana-growing districts helpless. As Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, measures to counter the disease have so far proved ineffective.
Banana is the source of food and income to many people in areas of northern and southern regions of Malawi, where maize, the country's main food crop, does not grow well. Grace Chimwaza is a banana farmer at Namazuma village in Mulanje district, one of the key banana growing districts in southern Malawi. She says they eat it as Nsima, Malawi's main food, made from maize flour. She also says they sell it and use the money to pay for school fees for their children. Chimwaza told VOA that her overall dependence on banana has now changed after the devastating banana bunchy top diseases attacked the crop 3 years ago. She says it was in 2014 when all the banana plants in her village started to wither and die down. They immediately reported the matter to agriculture extension workers, who advised them to uproot all the infected plants. But this did not help. She says many other areas started reporting the disease. Now over 5,000 hectares of banana fields have been affected in Mulanje alone. Thomson Chilanga is the station manager at Vumbwe Agriculture Research Station. He says the disease, which is spread through aphids, was first reported in Malawi 10 years ago in northern Malawi.
It actually came through some of the infected planting materials. We are fond of sharing banana plants. If people go to an area and then they see a banana plant which is very good to him or her, thinks of bringing that plant to the country.
He says as measure to reduce the infection, the government has banned transportation or any movement of banana plants. Also, the World Bank is funding a program which is introducing new banana varieties imported from South Africa and France to help revive the dwindling banana farming. Zeria Banda is the communications officer for the World Bank.
If you look at how the farmer, wherever the bananas are, it has really made them a bit more poorer than what they were. So the World Bank, being an organization that is about helping people move out of poverty, we thought that this is one of the most important things to do.
through the government-run agriculture sector-wide approach, or ASWAP program, farmers are advised to uproot the local variety and replace it with imported variety. Nearly 10,000 new plantlets have been distributed for free to farmers in Mulanje alone to replace the old plants. But a farmer, Frederick Piri, says the new variety is also being infected. He says when the new variety arrived, they were very happy that this will mark the end of their misery. But now he says they have seen that even the new variety is being attacked and they have now lost hope. However, agriculture researcher Chilanga says the spread of the disease will continue unless the farmers uproot all the old varieties.
To convince all the farmers to uproot what they have, it's very difficult. It's not an easy task. Some of them are uprooting, but a large number of the farmers are not uprooting. So that's a challenge there.
Chilanga says some farmers are reluctant to uproot old plants because they say they don't want to lose their local variety they have been depending on for decades. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
The government of Uganda is conducting a series of meetings between the local communities that host hundreds of refugees from South Sudan. The meetings are meant to discuss ways how both the refugees and local communities can peacefully coexist in the same area. Uganda State Minister of Internal Affairs Obiega Mario Kania met with locals and aid workers in Terego County to discuss with them the plight of refugees. Reporter Mgume Davis Rwakarinji attended one of such meetings and files this report.
Youth leader Richard Erema read the demands of the youth in Uriama sub-county before Minister Kania last week. Erema says the youth in the area demand to be informed about the activities of humanitarian agencies and the government.
Actually, we need a lot of information. We need a free flow of information so that we have no misunderstandings, our people get opportunities, and then we are able to coexist peacefully, to integrate properly.
Uganda now hosts more than 800,000 South Sudanese refugees. More than 572,000 of them arrived in Uganda in search of a safe place to live after violence erupted in Juba last year. The UN Refugee Agency says at least 172,000 South Sudanese have fled to Uganda this year alone. Erema says as the host community, they must benefit for hosting South Sudanese refugees in their area. Minister Kania agrees. He says the government will help facilitate many other series of meetings.
What you see the people expressing here is really reciprocating. They would like the agencies who are operating to reciprocate for the offer they have made. The offer of land is a very significant contribution. When somebody in Uganda says you settle in this land or use it, he's more or less giving a lifeblood of his livelihood.
The State Minister of Interior says it is important for both locals and refugees to know their rights and obligations.
We encourage these meetings not only within the implementing agencies and the local communities, but even between the locals and the refugees, so that they come to appreciate each other, so that we keep the level of communication going and going and going. That way, a lot of issues which could arise because of misunderstandings are resolved when they are still at their infancy. We definitely do encourage that, and we are going to continue with them.
Refugee Stephen Gatluwak lives in Rhino Camp in Arua District. He ran for refuge to Uganda from Jonglei State last year. He welcomes the initiative.
It is good to stay with the host community to show peaceful coexistence among the host community and the refugees. And also this is one thing. And we are also, our children, so they are schooling together with the children of the host community. That is why we are going to engage ourselves to be in this dialogue.
Uganda hosts more than 1 million refugees and has been held by the UN as a role model for refugee policies in the world. Reporting for VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup taking place in the Bahamas, where Nigeria and Senegal are representing the African continent. Nigeria's Super Sand Eagles staged a remarkable comeback to defeat Mexico 5-4 in extra time. This was after their 3-1 defeat to Italy in their first game of the World Cup. But since the victory came after extra time, Nigeria can only get 2 points and therefore trails Iran, which obtained 3 points following a regulation time 3-2 defeat of Mexico on match day one. Iran lost the second match 5-4 to group leaders Italy. Nigeria will have to beat Iran later tonight in the last group match to qualify behind group leaders Italy for the next round. The other African side, Senegal, has already booked a spot in the quarterfinals. Senegal underlined they are a team to watch out for at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup 2017 after an emphatic 10-1 victory over host Bahamas in their second Group A match. Ghana international and Pescara midfielder Sule Muntari walked off the field in protest at an alleged racist chant during his side's 1-0 defeat to Caligari on Sunday. The Ghana international appealed to the referee to stop the game, claiming the home fans were racially abusing him. But referee Daniel Minelli apparently did not hear the chant and instead opted to book the former Inter player for dissent. Sule Muntari then walked off the field, leaving the already relegated Pescara side to finish the game with 10 men. Pescara coach Zindek Zeman criticized the decision to punish the 32-year-old instead of dealing with the alleged abuse. Elsewhere in England, Manchester United players wore black armbands in Sunday's Premier League game against Swansea as a tribute to fans of the club who died in Calabar, Nigeria last week. At least 7 fans of the club were electrocuted when a high-voltage pole fell on the viewing centre where they were watching the club play a Europa League game against Anderlecht. The match ended in a 1-1 draw on Sunday after Gylfi Sigurdsson's stunning free kick earned Swansea a deserved draw against Manchester United. Skipper Wayne Rooney controversially gave his side the lead from the spot on the stroke of halftime after a Marcus Rashford dive. And back here on the African continent, the Confederation of African Football has confirmed that Mali will participate in the Total Under 17 African Cup of Nations Gabon 2017 competition scheduled for the 14th to the 28th of May 2017 in the Gabonese cities of Libreville and Pont-Gentil. This was after World Football ruling body FIFA lifted a month-long suspension of Mali Football Federation from international football activities. The move comes after the country's sports minister cancelled the dissolution of the Football Association a month into FIFA sanction. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. That was Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. And that's it for this Monday, May 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, in for James Batty, wishing you all a good day.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the latest political developments in Zambia. Will President Edgar Lungu declare a state of emergency after public buildings were torched in attacks? He blames the violence on opposition members protesting the arrest of their leader, Hakainde Hichilema. An in-depth discussion on Zambia on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.